Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, my friend, how are we doing?
I'm doing great, Jim. I'd like to interject before I ask you how you're doing that I am a St. Louis establishment. I'm not going to mention the establishment. If they'd like to sponsor the show, then I'll mention them. Part of a championship volleyball team, sand volleyball team. So that my weekend was great.
Get out of town. Little did I realize that Dustin Schutte is an athlete.
So it was like, so my fiance is very big into sand volleyball. She plays it a lot. So they had this tournament where it was veterans and beginners. And I was obviously the beginner. Now, back in my day, Jim, I had a little bit of athleticism, not a lot. And what's funny is I held my own on the volleyball court. But when you get done doing these things, when you're 17 or 27 in athletic, it's much different than when you're 37 in athletic. So my knees are still feeling it a little bit. It was a good time. And that was probably, I don't know, gosh, I've been part of like winning teams a few times, but that was the first kind of individualistic type thing that we did that I've won in a long time. So if I'm walking out with my chest out and, you know, patting myself on the back all week, it's been a good week.
Congratulations. Good. Well, I'll tell you what, I had a golf outing. My college roommate, which we're talking 45 years ago, Dustin, okay? He has a place at in Pennsylvania. People will know it, I guess, in Dubois. It's called Treasure Lake. Beautiful resort area. They have two golf courses on there. I had travel days Wednesday and Friday, so Thursday was the real day to golf. And I literally said to him, well, since we have all day Thursday, how about we do 36 holes? Ooh. He scoffed at me for that. We played 18. I realized why he scoffed. 65 years old. I was not prepared for 36 holes in any way, shape, or form. But I did sneak another additional 9 holes in Friday morning. And the funnier part is Thursday evening, we're there. We talked about going out, you know, painting a town of Dubois. And I guess there's that you could do that. And we looked at each other. How about we just stay in and make dinner here? So.
Yep, I totally get it. But it sounds like it was a good time.
It really was. Dwayne and I had a chance to catch up. Those who are dedicated listeners of the Keystone Kickoff Show may remember Dwayne. He made an appearance on a show. We had a couple listeners on. We had Dwayne, heavy-duty Penn State fan. He's got season tickets. He's got the RV. So he's full-blown. And to add to the compatibility as roommates, he's also a New York Mets fan. We on Thursday, Mets played an afternoon game while we were golfing. So we had the radio broadcast on the phone so we could listen to the game while we're golfing. Anyway, with that said, how about we move on to football? But while we're off on a tangent, a last tangent, because we do this every week. How about the Tyler Warren report for the week, Dustin?
You know, Tyler Warren, again, still the only thing I don't the only knock against him is he hadn't gotten into the end zone yet. Now, that's not his fault, I don't think. They've worked him into the offense. Another big game. My Colts 3-0, Jim. Danny Dimes, Indiana Jones, and the Destiny of Dimes. Just working it. And there it is. 3 catches, 38 yards. Now, I thought, so this is the dumbest thing ever while we're on a tangent. I live in St. Louis. The Colts are 3.5 hours away. The Kansas City Chiefs are about 3.5 hours away. You would think, I understand why the Chiefs get preference here. You would think we'd get Colts games. We never get the Colts. It drives me insane. We got Minnesota, Cincinnati. Thank God we got that 38-point blowout. So I was listening to the game, and I think Tyler Warren at one point left with an injury. I don't think it was serious, but I think he had to go to the sidelines for a little bit. But yes, Tyler Warren is up to almost 200 receiving yards on 14 or 15 catches this year. He is, as Penn State fans know, because I think I've mentioned this each of the last 2 weeks, best draft pick by the Colts since Peyton Manning. Maybe second best in franchise history. That's what, just leave it at that.
We love to hear that here in Pennsylvania. He was just a superstar here on the team. What a great player. And what I find interesting, and as we go off on our NFL tangent here just for a couple minutes, Daniel Jones, for those who aren't following this, the Colts are 3-0. Yes, this is the same Daniel Jones who washed out with the New York Giants, okay? This is a year after Saquon Barkley left the Giants because they preferred Daniel Jones or whoever at the time. Didn't sign Saquon Barkley. He goes to the Eagles and went from a star to a super-duper star in the NFL last year. And now Daniel Jones. So maybe the common thread is the Giants. And one of the best quotes that I saw online was, when he was playing for the Giants, he was going to get that Giant coach fired. Now that he's playing for the Colts, he's going to get that Giants coach fired.
No, I think that's fair. Now, I will say, as much, we haven't been 3-0 since 2009, we, as if I'm a member of the team. But what I will say is their three opponents are a combined 1-8 on the year. So I'm a little still hesitant to like buy all in and say that this, but I think it's fair to say he has exceeded expectations by far.
Well, remember though, three of those eight losses were to the Colts. So
that's
one
true.
In five really, in other five. Games,
yeah,
so much better. All right. Hey, how about we talk about some Big Ten football? What do you think, Dustin?
I think that sounds great.
Let's do it. Some interesting games. You and I, even all summer, we were talking about this big game coming up early in September or middle of September, one of the early weeks of Big Ten play. Illinois was playing Indiana. And this was going to tell us so much about those two teams. The winner kind of survives in that quest to make the playoffs. I'd say Indiana is the one of the two teams that looks like a threat to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I would say so. That was just utter dominance. And I think it's safe to say that Indiana is just as good as they were a season ago. Maybe they're better. And look, a lot of people say, well, what do we know about Illinois? And I think it's fair. They did not have some of their top defensive backs available in this game. So I think it's fair to say maybe Illinois wasn't a top 10 team. But on that same note, we have to give Indiana credit. I still think Illinois is a good football team. And Indiana just embarrassed them from start to finish. When they blocked that punt, I swear to God, Jim, this came out of my mouth. When they blocked that punt and scored a touchdown, I said, Indiana's going to win this game 56-14. I was a little off. But that was the same. It just looked like, and even Illinois struck a few plays later, scored a long touchdown pass. I still felt like Indiana's going to just run away with this game. They held Illinois to 2 rushing yards. Like, Illinois could not do anything. They looked abysmal. And I think, I don't know if I said it on this show or not, but a few weeks ago when Illinois beat Duke, the one thing I was really concerned about was Illinois forced 5 turnovers in that game. And that was the reason they won. That's a good thing when you can force turnovers, if you can keep that going. But my question was, when they play a good team and they can't get turnovers, what's it going to look like? Well, it looks pretty ugly.
Yeah. Well, the problem with depending on turnovers is, yes, there's such a thing as forcing them, but they could also be very random. I'm realizing this now over the last couple of weeks that I've been dwelling on quarterback play. And instead of, resisting it, I'm going to lean into it, Dustin, because here's another game. Fernando Mendoza, the transfer quarterback, came from Cal. Remember a year ago, Curtis Rourke. It was Kurt Cignetti hit on that one. Okay, he hit. Was it going to hit again on a transfer portal? quarterback. Sure looks that way. Here's the numbers, Dustin. This is incredible. 21 for 23, 267 yards, and 5 touchdowns. That's a pretty good day's work against an allegedly good defense. Again, couple guys out on defense. Well, that happens. That's football. Yep. You have right. guys out. Number and, oh, and by the way, they ran for over 300 yards too.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
It really is. I'm now sold on Indiana. Now, here's some of the repercussions of this as it relates to Penn State. Penn State has Indiana. All of a sudden, it changes that game. It changes the perception of Indiana. It also changes the perception of that game. Mm-hmm. So if Indiana keeps this going, although it should be mentioned, Indiana has on their schedule, they still have left, and their next game is at Iowa,
yep.
which could always be a test. They're at Penn State, and they're at Ohio State. You know,
Oregon.
This. I'm sorry. It's Oregon. Okay, I
and
knew
Oregon.
They played.
Yep.
And I have that in my notes here. Anyway, they've got the three big games. They just have to win one of those. So if they beat Iowa, they're in position where they can lose those two big games and still be a playoff team at 10-2 because they'll have a couple good wins under their belt.
Yeah, I think so. And you look at their other schedule, Michigan State, who is good offensively, but they struggled on the road against USC. Good God, Jim, what will they do to UCLA? I'm not even joking. There's potential that they could score 100 points in that game. And then the other one, and I don't want to – I know we're running out of time in this segment, so I'm just going to mention it. What I would be also interested in, because I don't know how much we know about this team either, but they look – fairly good this past weekend. Indiana does go to Maryland, and that could be another one where it's kind of a shootout a little bit. But Maryland played what I think, and we'll talk about this probably the next segment, is a really bad Wisconsin team.
Oh, yes. We will get to that. I have a segment on, stock up, stock down. Guess where Wisconsin plays into that particular one. But you're right, though. It's kind of interesting in looking at some of these god-awful teams now, and Wisconsin falls under it. But the next game I want to talk about, when we start the next segment, I want to hit Michigan-Nebraska, which was the other game that we highlighted going into this. So I want to talk to you about that. How about, Dustin, we hit that one right after we take this break. Make sure you stay with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. We're talking Big Ten football. But while I get the opportunity, I just want to mention this to our Penn State listeners. It's whiteout week here in Pennsylvania, Dustin. Penn State, Oregon, under the lights, whiteout. But you got to understand, this is a whole weekend event, okay? You don't show up at 7:30 Saturday night. No. You got to be there for the weekend. And for those of you getting to town on Friday, head on down to the new Buffalo Wild Wings. Great place if you like wings, and who doesn't? Great place for lunch. But we're going to be doing a live show Friday afternoon from 2 to 4. I'll be there. Chris Buccanani will be there. Executive Director of Happy Valley United, Mike Villagrana, will be there. Who knows? Maybe a surprise guest or two. That's Friday afternoon, 2 to 4, Downtown State College. Make sure you make it there. All right, Dustin, we were talking that we got through one game of highlights, okay, from the Big Ten, which is okay. Still got plenty of show left to talk about the Big Ten games. We went over Indiana just crushing Illinois. The other big game was Michigan-Nebraska. And I think we both thought this was that game that's going to tell us, again, just like the Illinois-Indiana game, which one of these teams is kind of maybe, if not at the very top tier of the Big Ten, to be like knocking at the door?
Yeah, I mean, we went into this game. Nebraska was 3-0. Michigan was 2-1 with their only loss to Oklahoma. And you just kind of wondered, like, Sharon Moore's not on the sideline. Bryce Underwood, who really struggled against Oklahoma in his only road game, how is he going to perform in another hostile environment? This was a chance for Matt Rhule to kind of show, like, hey, we've, as a program, we've taken that next step. And for Michigan, it was also an opportunity to say, hey, we haven't gone anywhere. We're still one of the better teams in the Big Ten. And this was another game where I think what you saw, it was a really good football game, but how much the trenches matter, because Michigan dominated up front on both sides of the ball. And even though they only won by three, they did feel like in those they controlled the line of scrimmage and they kind of controlled the game that way. And they had, I think they rushed for like 220 yards, something like that. Nebraska finished with under 50. That's the difference in the game right there. I mean, Michigan just was dominant up front, both sides of the football.
I don't want to write off Nebraska for one loss, but as you put, this was the game that could announce their arrival. Mm-hmm. Everything, you know, Michigan had the big name, the big brand. I'm not sure Nebraska's ready to play with Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State yet, but they're playing in their own league here, you know, against a team mm-hmm. like Michigan at home. This was where they announced that they've gotten to that next level. They didn't do it. I'm not writing off Matt Rhule, but this was an opportunity game for them.
I have two comments here. So number one is they can still have a really good season. You look at their schedule, they're off this week. Then they have Michigan State, Maryland, Minnesota, Northwestern, USC, UCLA, Penn State, and Iowa. I think you still feel good that they could get to 8 or 9 wins, but they're going to have to improve on the front line. The second thing is, Jim, this drives me nuts, is early in that game, and I don't remember if they could have scored. I think they could have scored first. They got into the red zone. It was at the 2 or 3 yard line, 4th and goal. They have lost like 10 or 11 games under Matt Rhule by 3 points or less, something like that. They went for the touchdown instead of kicking the field goal. And then after the game talks about analytics, take your flipping points. I have seen so many times where that bites teams, and it's not just Nebraska. But to me, there's a lot of coaches that just say, well, the analytics said, well, okay, how about we use our brains here a little bit and say, when you're in these situations, these close games, you want to just get the points and maybe put pressure on the other team. And I think that was obviously they lost by 3 points. Like that was I understand hindsight's 20/20, but in so many of these games, and this is not just a Nebraska problem, it's a college football problem. I see a lot of these, it's just like, well, look at the analytics. It's like, okay, well, how about we critically think while we're on the sidelines? I know that's asking a lot because we talk about clock management and things like that, but that was another big mistake in this game. And I don't know. I doubt Michigan's going to cave to the pressure if they're down 3-0 early. But at least you give your offense some credit and say, hey, we didn't score a touchdown, but we got points on this drive. And I think that made a difference in this game a little bit.
And you hit one of my pet peeves there, too, is I'm an analytics guy, okay? I don't think in football teams go for it enough, okay? On the surface, and again, this is what he talked, on the surface, the analytics, you're at the 2 or 3 yard line, you do go for it. And the thought being, even if you miss, you've got your opponent pinned down against their own goal line. However, understand where your team is.
Yes.
Are you home or on the road? Are you, you know, don't take the fans out of the game. Kick the field goal. Get your fans into it. Keep your team in it, knowing who your team is and what the effect would be on your team if you don't make it. You know, it's the, oh, here we go again. As Nebraska, you've been losing all these one-score games. So that, yes, you've got to understand the context of the game and what's happening. And that's where coaches use analytics now as a crutch.
Yeah,
I agree. It's okay to do what I did because that's what the book tells me to do. Don't blame me. Blame the book. So,
and to that point, real quick,
yeah,
we never see the book, so they could lie about it all the time. We would never know.
Yeah, where is that book, by the way? Anyway, let's move on. A game that you alluded to, which intrigued me, in Madison, Maryland took it to Wisconsin 27-10. Okay. You and I didn't trust Wisconsin going into this, but I had zero trust of Maryland also, okay? But Maryland looks like they might have their quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I was impressed with him. I think you can tell he's still a young guy and made a lot of mistakes. There were some situations where if he's playing a better football team, they probably intercept him or they sack him. But he did what he needed to do. And to go on, like, Madison is not an easy place to win. You're going on the road. I believe this is Maryland's first road game of the season. So again, you're going to have those road jitters and getting accustomed to go, but they scored, you know, basically via their special teams a couple times in that game early on to really set the tone. So, look, I'm not going to be super high on Maryland just yet because it feels like this is what happens to them every year. They get out to a good 3-0, 4-0 start, and you're like, oh, maybe Maryland's pretty good. I think they're better, regardless of how this goes, I think that they're still going to be better than I anticipated coming into the season. But my bigger takeaway was, and I think we even texted Jim, like, dear God, how bad is Wisconsin?
Yes, yes. They are awful. Maryland 4-0, yes. Would you be stunned if they finished the season 5-7 or 6-6? Not at all.
No.
A couple other games I want to hit on is it appears USC, at least they have their offense going again. Put up 45 points against Michigan State. They win it 45-31. How I don't want to say is USC back, but are they back?
I think they can score points with anybody. I saw the one thing I would say, and their red zone offense was better this week than it was a few weeks ago against Purdue. But the biggest problem is, and you saw this in the game against Purdue, you saw this in the game against Michigan State, their secondary is very leaky. And so when they play teams that can throw the ball and have good receivers, they are big play or bust. They are good at forcing turnovers and getting interceptions, but if they don't, you're going to be able to pick them apart. I think that their defensive line is really good. And so I don't want to say they can completely shut down the run, but they can slow you down quite a bit. I'm not ready to say that USC is on Oregon or Ohio State level yet, but they have the athletes they can win a lot of games. I don't even know if they're knocking on the college football playoff door. I'm sure I'd have to look at their schedule, but like that, the game against Michigan, I think that they have the athletes where I don't want to say it's going to look similar to the way Illinois, Indiana went, but they play Illinois this next week. That one could get ugly too, because I don't think Illinois, as we saw last week, has the athletes to compete with USC. So Illinois may be able to move the football better, but I do think USC is in that middle tier, maybe with like Michigan, in terms of their offensive prowess. They got some work to do defensively, but it's mostly the secondary.
I think what's saving Illinois in that upcoming game, and we're going to look at this week's schedule, but you mentioned it's USC is at Illinois. Mm-hmm. If it were at USC, if it was out in LA, I wouldn't be surprised if USC boat raced Illinois after what we saw from them last week at home. Maybe they have a chance of keeping it close, but Illinois also this season has a chance of getting away from them if they lose to USC.
And that, you know, this should teach us a valuable lesson, Jim. Never buy the hype on a team that is supposed to be the dark horse heading into the Big Ten. We fell for it last year against Rutgers, and then we fell for it this year against Illinois. But because, and the reason I say that is Illinois could still have a very good season. They're not getting into the playoff. That's not happening. They're not going to beat Ohio State. And I think they've got another big game on their schedule at some point. They got to go on the road at Washington. And I think Washington's pretty good. So this, they could still have a good season, but they are not college football playoff worthy.
I think what they're going to have to deal with, especially this year where there is the emphasis on the quality of the schedule, quality of wins. This is why, you know, we talked about it last week, and I felt like maybe it doesn't mean that the winner of Illinois-Indiana is going to make the playoffs, but it probably means the team that loses won't. So any kind of tiebreaker, somebody in that playoff room is going to, hey, did you watch that Indiana game?
Right.
You really want to put that team in the playoffs?
Exactly. Yep.
And, you know, God forbid that tiebreaker is with a Southeast Conference team. They don't have a chance. So
I agree. Yep.
That's why that game was so important to them and to Indiana. And, boy, Indiana did more than pass the test. All right. When we come back, Dustin has his Big Ten top five teams. And trust me, folks, he's going to need to defend it. Dustin, are you prepared to defend it?
I think so.
We will see after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number three of our show. And as we teased prior to the break, Dustin, you've got your top five. Now, in prior weeks, I had to kind of cajole you. I reached out to you. Be prepared to do your top five. This week, over the weekend, my friend, you sent me the note, unsolicited. Jim, here's my top five. You put it out there with lots of pride, chest puffed out. Here's my top five. It was a statement. Give us your top five, Dustin.
My top five. All right. Everybody sitting on pins and needles. Oregon at number one. I think they've looked so dominant. I understand their competition level hasn't been there. And we're going to find out a lot about Oregon this week. But I think the way Oregon has looked, I put them at number one. Ohio State, obviously, they had a bye week. They have the win over Texas in week one. I'm still a little iffy on how good Texas is, but that's a quality opponent. That's a good win for Ohio State. I moved Indiana up to number three because they now have – and look, the first three opponents they played were terrible. I don't know how else – it wasn't just the fact, I think if they beat Illinois 24-10, or, you know, something along those lines. I probably still have them behind Penn State, but it was so dominant from start to finish that I had no choice. And I know they played three cupcakes to start the season. They haven't left the state of Indiana yet. I have to move them above Penn State, who I still think is very good and could has a very good chance of beating Indiana when they play at home. But Penn State hasn't looked good their last two games. They haven't played anybody. That's why I moved them to four. And then number five, I think Michigan getting a road win against Nebraska was pretty impressive. And their run game and their defensive line, I thought, was really good in that game. The one thing I'll note is you could move Penn State up above Indiana. I'm not going to argue with you too much. You could also put USC ahead of Michigan if you wanted to, and I wouldn't argue with that either.
Okay, let me try to understand you, Dustin, okay? I'm trying to understand.
Yep.
Are you saying you value more what actually happens on the field than preseason hype? Is that what you're telling me here?
That's what I'm telling you a little bit, yeah. Just a little bit.
You know, I want so badly to give you a hard time for it, but I've argued all along, you know, when you rank these teams, show me something, show me a reason. And I had felt, you know, with Ohio State's win against Texas in that first game. And again, Texas may not be what we thought they were, or a lot of folks thought they were the best team in the country, and Ohio State beat them. To me, that was the best win. I think we still have to find out, you know, how good a win it was for Indiana over Illinois. Might we find out that we all just thought too much of Illinois, gave them too much credit, that they may not be what we think? We've yet to find that out yet. However, the manner in which Indiana handled Illinois, you got to think, boy, they impressed in that game. And Penn State, and the games they played, you know, you could have beat Villanova 90-6 instead of 52-6. And there's still obviously some things that aren't clicking for this Penn State team. So it's why, like, even if we – and I do want to look at the Associated Press top five or 10 teams, Dustin. And we had kind of a similar thing to what you did by – bumping Indiana above Penn State in the national polls. So let me just get this straight. Penn State is fourth in the Big Ten, but third in the country. So just so I got that correct.
Yeah, but, sure.
Miami jumped Penn State in the national poll. And I think there are some Penn State people who are freaking out about it. And it's like, don't worry about it. Doesn't matter. Irrelevant. Go beat Oregon and you'll be back up.
Yeah. Well, and to that, to your point, Jim, now it doesn't, the Associated Press poll, I don't want to say never mattered, but now it especially, you're not looking to get in the top four. So it doesn't matter nearly as much. If you beat Oregon, you're in the driver's seat. I don't care if they say, well, Penn State didn't look that good, we're going to move them down to sixth. You're still in great position to make the college football playoff. You just have to win this week. And honestly, if they beat Oregon this week, they'll be back at number two.
That's my feeling. And if they're not, Dustin, who cares? Who cares? And that's what the 12-team playoff does. And if not, you know, do you you'll play Ohio State later in the year. And if you go into that game undefeated, you're in great shape. Cause even if you lose and you finish the season 11-1, you're in great shape. It becomes irrelevant. And the other part of this conversation is those first three games, they were irrelevant. Penn State played. As a fan, as a college football fan, I want to see them play legitimate teams.
Yeah.
They don't have to go schedule Georgia, but how about just scheduling something like they did in the last couple of years? They had West Virginia. They had Pitt. They had Auburn. And I was reminded by someone, they actually were originally scheduled to play Virginia Tech this year. But as someone else pointed out, that may not have been any tougher than Florida International.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And, you know, I'm looking at this, Jim, and this is interesting to me. If I'm Penn State, you got Oregon, then the next two games, UCLA, Northwestern. Then, to me, the defining stretch is then you go in late October into November at Iowa, at Ohio State, at home against Indiana.
Yes.
I mean, it is an interesting schedule for Penn State the rest of the season. Now, I know UCLA and Northwestern, they should cruise to wins in those games. But it's really interesting how this schedule plays out for the Nittany Lions.
You know, here's the thing, and this is, again, going back to the off-season discussion about schedule strength, and the out-of-conference scheduling is embarrassing. It's awful, just awful by mm-hmm. Penn State. But they're still playing 9 conference games, which means the Southeast Conference teams who are playing 8 conference games plus 1 of their 4 non-conference games being a Power 4 game, they're playing the same number of power teams, power conference teams at 9. And they also, what was it, Indiana, I believe, is up to number 11 in the rankings. Penn State's going to have 3 of the top 11 teams in the country, 2 of the top 6 teams in the country on their schedule. That's legitimate, okay? Yeah. So, but by the end of the year, you won't be able to say, well, who did they beat? Well, they're going to have several games against highly ranked teams.
Yep. You'll have plenty of opportunities to point to good wins on the schedule.
Yeah, so that's why, you know, I'm not concerned about it. The rankings, even though you somehow find it in your Midwestern head of yours to put Indiana ahead of Penn State. I'll give you a pass on that, Dustin. Real quick, before we, you know, start to look forward, looking back on this past week in the national picture, kind of want to see there your idea with who's stock up and who's stock down in the national picture.
Oh boy. I would say for right now, Miami, I think, is way up. They just 26-7. It was a pretty hard fought game, but I think they controlled Florida for a majority of it. It's hard. Like Florida State has been, obviously they had that win over Alabama. Golly, you would ask me this question. Tough. Here's another one. Okay. So I had to scroll through the scores to find this. Texas Tech might be the best team in the Big 12. They just manhandled Utah.
I did not see that coming. I like Utah.
Yeah, I did too. Utah is usually, you know, very good, very sound. They're usually one of the better teams in that league. But Texas Tech is another team that I think keep your eye on, because I don't think because they're in the Big 12, they're going to get a lot of national attention. But that's a team that could cause some problems. I don't know why Auburn was ranked number 22 in the country. I don't get it. I mean, I know they fought valiantly against Oklahoma. I just don't know that they're that good.
Auburn is still going to Auburn no matter what.
Correct.
When I was looking at games going into the weekend and I saw that, and I saw, you know, games ranked opponents, Auburn? Really? Yeah. You know, that was my reaction to it. The other team that impressed me, and it's both a riser and a faller in the same game, Syracuse beating Clemson and handling them pretty well.
Oh boy, that was dumb college football moment. I should have known that. Yeah. Clemson is, they are not a good football team this year. Poor Tom Allen.
Well, I texted with one of our colleagues, Andy Shea, and I just said, well, he's not wrapping himself in glory today, is he?
Yeah.
And it also, I think Dabo, boy, you know, some of his quotes, well, if you don't want to win, you could get rid of me. And I saw someone remark, no, it's that we don't want to lose. That's why we might get rid of you.
Right.
He's got the talent and he's losing. It's, you know, don't blame someone else, Dabo. This one's on you.
Yeah. Well, I've heard a lot of people in Clemson, like, they don't want to fire Dabo. He's done a lot of really good things, but you got to catch up with the times. You can't avoid the transfer portal. You got to go in there. You've got to get up to date with NIL and rev share and all that stuff. You can't, or if he doesn't want to, then now's the time to get out of college football coaching or go coach at another level or something.
Well, I think this is where he has won his way. And he can't accept that the world has changed. He could be just as good a coach as he was previously and coach his way. That just doesn't, it's a different game today than it was 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. Different game. And if you're not willing to change with it, this is what's going to happen. I know you want to respond to that. I'm going to let you do that right after this break because I think it's worth the conversation. Coach's ability to adapt. We'll do that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We're talking Big Ten football. We're talking national football. When we wrapped up quarter number three, we were talking about Dabo Swinney and what's going on at Clemson. And he just doesn't seem to be embracing at all or even accepting, Dustin, the new world of college football. And it is a new world.
Yeah, I think what's most bizarre about this is his resistance, and he's in his early to mid, I want to say he's 55, so he's in his mid-50s. It's not like Nick Saban was able to do this, and he's, what, 70? Like, other right. coaches who are older than him have adopted this, and it's just bizarre to me. I understand that maybe there's a little bit of resistance because, you know, he's been able to do things on his watch and accomplish things. But it's a brand new world, and you have to be able to adjust. You have to go in the transfer portal. You have to recruit certain ways. You have to be able to pitch NIL and other. And again, if you don't want to do that, that's perfectly fine. You don't have to prove anything to anybody else. But if you're not willing to make those adjustments, you're either A, going to lose, or you're going to lose. And then eventually you're going to lose your job, and you can't get frustrated by it. Like, it may suck that you have to make those changes, but that's the way of the world.
And, you know, we've been talking here on our show about how James Franklin has handled it. And my take from James Franklin is it's irrelevant whether he likes it or not, because it's the real world, yeah. You know, so you've got to deal with it. Now, here's how he deals with it differently than Deion Sanders does in Colorado or what they're doing at Texas Tech. And is there a right way, wrong way? Not sure that's real. We're going to – let me take that back. I don't know if we're ever going to find out if this way's better than that way because there'll be up and downs. 2 years ago, Florida State doing it, it seemed great. A year ago, not so great. Texas Tech seems to be having some success right now. Another guy in the very game, Syracuse, and their coach has accepted what's going on. And I'll compare them with what Indiana has done, bringing in a transfer quarterback and making the right call. And it looked like Syracuse, they did it with Kyle McCord a year ago, and they brought Angeli in from Notre Dame. Boy, if you watch this game, that looked like a very good call. Unfortunately, it appears he's out for the rest of the season with an injury. But that's a coach who has embraced what's going on in the game, Dustin.
Yeah, and these coaches are way more successful. And, I mean, I've even heard, again, on the Purdue side, Barry Odom basically say, and this is in regard to the transfer portal, but it applies the same thing. It was, doesn't matter if I think it's best for the game or not, the one transfer portal window. That's the rule they're giving us, and so we have to use it to our advantage. And so you can sit there and complain, but you're not going to get very far, and you're not going to be very successful if you're just complaining about the rules and refusing to adapt. What's the saying, Jim, adapt or die? I mean, right now we're watching Clemson start to perish a little bit.
Yes, I think we are. And it is that the attitude that he's presenting, and that's the image going out there, I think, for a transfer portal guy. It's like, might they hesitate going to Clemson because he's not embracing it. And that's, again, I'm closer to Penn State program than any of the others. And I saw how Penn State embraced it for – they fill holes with the portal. They're not redoing their whole team. They had a hole at wide receiver. We're going to go find the three best we could find. They ended up having a late transfer, the linebacker transfer, that surprised them. Well, let's just go find the best linebacker we can. And that's how they approached it, and it's the smart way to do it. All right, let's look ahead a little bit here, Dustin. Let's start with the Big Ten, work our way out from there. But the big game here in State College, it's Oregon, it's Penn State, it's Whiteout. Got to get a pick for me. I want to hear from you. You're not here in the middle of the Penn State propaganda, nor are you out west with Oregon. How do you see this game playing out?
I'm surprised that this game's actually second fiddle in the Big Ten, only behind UCLA Northwestern. That's going to be a real, just an absolutely disgusting game. Okay. In all seriousness, I think that this is the first big test. And yes, Jim, this is either James Franklin has turned the corner or we got to fire him because he can never win the big game. But let's just prepare for all that. I am interested to see, because I think Oregon has the athletes, I'm interested to see if Penn State is able to match their athleticism. Drew Aller has gotten knocked a little bit for his performance the last couple weeks before the bye week. How ready is he for this environment? And I think the one thing, and you've kind of mentioned this, Jim, is all fall camp and their three games, they could essentially prepare for Oregon all of this time. How ready are they for their schemes? How ready are they for their different looks? This to me, I like it's, and even on the matchup predictor, this has become my favorite thing, by the way, 51.1 in favor of Penn State, 48.9 Oregon. I don't want to simplify it and say that I think that this game comes down to quarterback play, because I think that's an oversimplification. But at the same time, I think Dante Moore has looked really good through the first couple games, and there's still some question marks about Drew Aller. And maybe that's not fair because he took a big step last season, but he hasn't looked great to start this year. I think if I'm Penn State, you want to try to stretch the field a little bit, get those two running backs, Catron Allen and Nick Singleton, the football early, and establish a good ground game. If you're able to wear down the Oregon defense and keep the offense on the sideline, like, to me, the way Penn State wins this game is not in a shootout. I think that favors Oregon. If you can keep this around 24 to 21, 24, something like that, I think that really bodes well for Penn State, because you want to minimize Oregon's offensive possessions. You want to wear down their defense. And I think if Penn State's offensive line can get good push, if they can establish a strong running game and then let Drew Aller maybe take some deep shots here or there in the game and they're able to convert on those, I think Penn State's going to put itself in a really good position to win.
So you mean that team you dropped down in the rankings?
Yes, against the number one team. But my question is, and this is legitimately, I don't know the answer to this. How good is Oregon's defense? And I think that's the question. Is their defensive line, can they hold up against Penn State's offensive line? Because if Penn State can't establish a run game, Oregon's going to win. Like they have to be able to keep Oregon's offense on the sideline, in my opinion.
And, you know, towards that end, I will oversimplify it. Drew Auer. It's Drew Auer. And you talk about, you know, staying on the field. Well, this is a team that was 3 of 12 on third down against Florida International. This is a team against Villanova. Their third down, it was better. Okay, and we're talking about Villanova. I think they were 5 for 12. Okay. Do you know on third down what Drew Aller's stats were, third down passing?
Was it I thought I did know this. Was it 0 of 5?
0 of 5, yes. Yeah. 0 of 5. Can't be. Can't have it. And some of those were definite misfires by him, okay? Which means, you know, on first down, you make that mistake, that's fine. You can still get your first down. You do it on third down, no, you're turning the ball over to the other team. So I look at it, and I think the entire game is on Drew Auer, and it's not a question of physical capability. The guy can spin it, okay? It's up in his head, you know, how does he play, knowing it's a big game with the pressure of it, being probably, if he plays well, I believe Penn State wins. If he doesn't play well, Penn State loses.
I think that's a fair assessment. And I don't, so I would like to get your response to this then, because in my head, this, what you're saying doesn't mean that Drew Aller has to throw for 300 yards. He just has to be efficient and make smart plays. So if he finished the game, I don't know, 17 of 25 and 200, maybe around 200 yards, but he didn't have a turnover and they were around 50% on third down. Because I don't think Penn State's going to let him rip it for 400 yards in that game. But he just has to be efficient on those plays.
If you're exactly right. And if you look at his number of throws per game last year, he wasn't throwing 35 passes a game. He was throwing 23, 24, 25. But you might see him 19 of 24, no interceptions. But, and it's probably saying the same thing, is he can't be 0-5 on third down, okay?
Right.
And the other thing that I don't have my notes right in front of me, but when he gets into a two-minute offense, he was like 4-5 for 55 yards on that one drive before the half, you know? They had like a minute 10, and he only used up like 35 seconds and marched him right down the field. And I think he's comfortable doing that. And it's like people are catching up with that now and asking the question, where I was ahead of time here, Dust. A year ago, we saw some of this. They were behind against USC, had to chuck the ball around. He was very good because they were playing that two-minute, four-minute late game offense because they were behind multiple touchdowns. So I'd like to see a little bit more, open things up a little bit. Don't get so conservative, even though that's Penn State's nature. When they're playing well, they have the long extended drives, 10, 12 play drives. They're not always hitting it over the top.
I was going to say, as I was talking about how I thought Penn State could win, I'm sure there's a handful of people in State College that just like face palmed and like, this is how we lose every game. But I think you can control the game and then still take mitigated risks. I think you can take some risks throughout the course of the game. I think it was against Oregon last year in the Big Ten championship game where, yes, Penn State lost, but it felt like they put it all on the line. It didn't feel like when they lose to Ohio State.
The question often comes up, why is James Franklin so unsuccessful against the best teams? And if I had to point at anything, it's just that he plays not to lose against Ohio State, but plays to win against other teams. That's what I want to see in this game. Play to win. Don't try to avoid losing. And I think they'll be more successful. All right, Dustin, that's it for this show. Guess what? Next week, we'll get to talk about this Penn State-Oregon game and see how it turns out. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.